appreciate your interest in the Board of Regents. I think we've explained a little bit about this process. We'll turn it back to you for opening comments and 5 minutes or so on why you're interested in serving on the Board of Regents. Then we will have the RCAC members off fire questions left and right. Beware of that one over there, Ms. Carlson. She's known for her questioning.
I'm used to that.
She's probably already prepared. And then you'll have an opportunity for closing comments if you'd like, hopefully all within 45 minutes. So.
Sure.
So welcome.
Thank you very much. I know we're all eager to get over to the big event tonight over at the River Center, and thank you very much. I know it's been a long few days for you, and you're making a very important decision, and let me just thank you up front for being included in this process. I feel honored and very much appreciative of that. It's a remarkable assignment, the thought prospect of a region at a critical time in the university's future, and certainly in an opportune time with a new president. As you know, I'm Susan Adams Lloyd, proud graduate of the University of Minnesota, and of a four-generation family of Gophers. I currently serve as the CEO of the Better Business Bureau, and you'll have to excuse me, I had jaw surgery a couple weeks ago, so occasionally I swear and spit, but I'll try not to fling it too
That's
far.
That's why there's a little way. Buffer zone.
Forgive
here.
Me. Yeah, a little buffer zone. It's very good. So. Over the past 25 years, I've served in similar senior leadership positions and in many complex organizations, and ultimately responsible for people and profits and products, and the largest of which is 270 people and $75 million of revenue. And I've served on various community boards as well, including the U of M Alumni Association, where I chaired, and also the Minneapolis Regional Chamber, which I also chaired. The almost $4 billion enterprise of the University of Minnesota is the economic driver of our state. And building bridges between the business community and the University of Minnesota is imperative, especially at a critical time when the workforce is actually dwindling across the state. And I have connections to both. Facing tough decisions and navigating uncertainty are common threads to the various assignments that I've had. I've worked hard, and in aggregate, the ride has been fulfilling and rewarding. And I'm here before you because I always believe in giving back. Remarkably, in my most senior leadership position and board positions, I have found myself as the only woman at the table, and often where there are no people of color. So by default, I have served as the lone, diverse perspective. My husband and I share two nieces and four nephews of color, one of whom graduated from the U of M last spring, which makes me vigilant about matters of inclusion. We try very hard to teach our own two children about the wonderful and importance of contemplating different ways of thinking, and therefore hosted six exchange students who each lived with us for up to a year. Both of our kids studied abroad. One of the unique features of my recent program at Harvard was there was an international component to it. Classmates came from all over the globe. So please know that diversity issues are at the forefront of my strategies and decision making. At a colleague's urging, I first dabbled in and then committed to this crazy graduate program at Harvard most recently. My husband gets a kick out of saying that he's married to a recent college graduate. And graduating last spring, I often said, the last thing that you want to do is grow old and die at your desk in the corner office. And my purpose was, in embarking on that program, was to stay relevant and actually absorb as much as I could of contemporary thinking and to embed myself among young people to gain insight. To lead millennials, it's valuable to understand them. So think of me as a perennial, a recent college graduate with 40 years of experience coming up for a second time. As I mentioned, I have two children, both recent college graduates, so I know firsthand the hardships and the complexities of funding higher education and ongoing training. Student debt and actually financial literacy in general are of great concerns of society. And it's something that I try to bring along young people and mentor accordingly. I care very much about this issue. and higher education because of rising costs and what it's doing to society in general by giving young people a slow start at making progress in their own lives. The last thing that you should know about me up front is that I'm an athlete. I'm a competitive mass sprinter. And being a pre-Title IX female athlete, I can tell you that athletics has defined me. And I think for many students at the University of Minnesota, whether it's varsity sports or intramural sports or the beautiful rec center where I work out twice a week, it's an important part. Those extracurricular opportunities breed leadership and development. And it's not something that we can overlook as we move forward in understanding that student experience. I understand that the region's job is that of being one of asking tough questions, seeking short and long-term strategies, preserving the vitality of our most important institution, and fostering new opportunities that ensure a bright future. I value the university for its students, for the faculty, for the staff as an employer, and certainly for the community. And I'd just like to wrap up my intro by saying I bring a broad view, some very unusual and unique perspectives, an open mind and heart, and an ethical framework that would never be swayed.
Thank you very much. I will start with the first question about the University of Minnesota's land grant mission. The University of Minnesota is our state's land grant university. What does that mean to you, and what do you think it should mean to the people of Minnesota?
Well, it was an entity before the state was an entity, and it has an obligation as the tentpole to our history and to our future to serve the community in general, not only in terms of higher academic education, as I mentioned, and free thought, but also as an employer and as one that looks out for the future in terms of creative problem solving, in terms of thinking outside of its own sphere and its own concerns to serve the people of Minnesota now and in the future.
Thank you. Council Member Carlson.
Yes. In your application, which you marked as public, you said boards are like ponds. Without a fresh source of flowing water, they grow stagnant and sometimes toxic. From your perspective, how does this relate to the governance of the Board of Regents at this point in time?
Thank you, Margaret. I think it's very important, as I've heard described on a number of fronts, that the region be inclusive. And that means thinking about not only the complexity of people in terms of demographics, but inclusion in terms of diversity of thought. And if you look over the history of the regions, I'm going to just say, speak very plainly, there's been very few people and very few people of color. As I mentioned in my intro, something that I'm used to. And it's not just a demographic perspective that comes along with that. It's a geographic perspective. I know the framework of the university's region board is to serve the entire state as well. But making certain that that board is truly representative, as best as it can be in a 12-person board, to serve the best interests of a broad range. And therefore, I think it's time that the university region committee, as you all are, and in that process, that we work hard to put that diversity and inclusion in the forefront. It's sometimes a tough thing to lead with, but I charge the board, the regions, in terms of not only representing that as a coming into that mix, not only representing their own proximity and their own vantage point, but working hard to understand those unique positions along the ride. And I think that there has been, certainly in the last, I'm going to say, 10 years that I've been back in Minnesota, so I'm going to say from my own vantage point, since about 2006, a narrowing of that and a surprisingly behind the time reflection, I guess, of where diversity, strong diversity and initiatives, inclusion initiatives are born.
Councilmember Menon.
Thank you, and thank you for being here, Ms. Adams-Lloyd.
Thank you.
My question relates to crisis management. Mm-hmm. the University of Minnesota has faced a wide array of crises in the last few years, and I want to know what you think are the core important aspects of crisis management and how that plays into your work as part of a collaborative, or you working as part of a collaborative with the Board of Regents.
Thank you for that question, and that's an important thing. In my remarks, I talked about strategy and the importance of thinking in terms of short and long-term strategy. And I think there's, as a complex entity as the University of Minnesota, there are going to be crises that occur. But strong leadership prepares one. A friend of mine is a paramedic, oddly, before he went into media, and he talks about the 6 years of preparing as a paramedic actually was the best training that he had for long-term leadership. Media is a complex world, and he said that the practice of good decision-making that he learned in becoming a paramedic prepared him for the times where that crisis management, and he could lead calmly and with thought and vision. It's also important to have smart people around you, because in crisis management, diversity of thought and experiences come into play. You can't be the genius with 1,000 helpers, and likewise, the Board of Regents would must have a surround themselves with good ideas and information in an ongoing way, so that when those crises hit, there is certainly a unity of devotion, I guess, maybe not always a unity of thought, but at least a common belief that solid management has to come from good listening and cohesion, that respect built in. So you can't anticipate always what those crises are going to be. Sometimes they're beyond comprehension. But certainly the processes and preparing for those crisis kinds of management allows you to lead with more clarity and more thought of mind and in control, rather than reacting, you're acting more proactively.
Thank you.
Next question. Councilmember Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Lloyd. I'd like to ask a question about professional education.
Sure.
I'm a graduate of medical school, and the university's budget has a significant portion of its $4 billion spent on the health sciences. Medical school produces 80% of the practicing physicians in this state. And over the last couple of decades, the rankings of this school have continued to be decreased, where it was commonly at least in the top 10 in the country. Now we're talking about mid or higher 30s, and we can argue about validity of some of the rankings, of course. But your views or ideas on how to improve the standings among schools in the country, and I'm specifically mentioning medical school, but any other professional school may have the same question.
Sure, and those rankings, I have a perspective you can torture statistics until they confess, and sometimes, indeed, statistics can be a matter of, you know, perspective, and when you dig down deeper, you might find, well, that poll says this because of that, and it's not really as bad or as good as it might be. But I do think in my pursuit of this position and uncovering what I could about the challenges that we have at the University of Minnesota, certainly our relationship with the Fairview system and other institutions across the state is key in figuring that out and making the University of Minnesota as a whole, the elite school to go to, and so that we attract the best and the brightest in that process. And not knowing fully what the data says about the med school perspective of one to the other, or how those that rankings truly are uncovered, getting at the root of that, I think, is essential. But again, 80% of our healthcare professionals are getting their education from the University of Minnesota at a time where healthcare needs in the state and an aging population are going to be key, not only attracting them to the University of Minnesota for the sake of the university and bolstering that med school up to where it needs to be for the sake of the university, but for the sake of our entire state. And thereby then calls to the question, what is our relationship with the other MINSCU programs and some of the other strategic partners that we have, whether it's Mayo, whether it's know, we're blessed with really good healthcare systems in general, and what can that, those strategic partnerships yield beyond the Fairview system to not only bolstering our program, but also helping ensure that we continue to have the requirements that we need to serve that aging population that is going to need health care, that is living longer and serving those needs from a broad-based perspective. So both from a business strategy as well as a proactive leadership capacity, that's something that we need to focus on.
Can I just add one little comment to that? As you mentioned, the new agreement, a fairly new agreement between Fairview
yep.
and the university. And so you have any opinion about that agreement's improvement of the academic healthcare center?
Well, again, I haven't seen the agreement in totality, and I'm curious about it and very interested in it. I can tell you I had great knee surgery there a couple years ago, so I had firsthand experience to know the professionalism of the staff that served me. But I have heard and have read some dissenting viewpoints on whether it's more advantageous for the healthcare the Fairview system than it is for the university. And I think in real strategic partnerships, there has to be a win-win situation, not the least of which in this is the state of Minnesota. So the trifecta would be what's good for the U and good for that healthcare system needs to also be good for the ongoing welfare of the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Councilmember Moore.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Candidate Adams-Lloyd, for being here and sharing your time with us. You led with diversity, and it seems to be a passionate topic for you. Can you explain to the council, in your opinion, what's the role of the University of Minnesota in creating a more equitable landscape so that everybody can succeed here in our state?
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate that question, and again, I'm hoping from an inside perspective to one day understand how to really serve that need. That being said, from the outside perspective, again, I think oftentimes we think about bringing a more diverse student population to the mix and making certain that the achievement gaps are such that there's fair access and opportunities for people of color. And I think that by limiting our perspective only to that particular problem and situation, we're forgetting the fact that diversity and inclusion means the whole system. It means the whole system of educators and faculty and staff and leadership from deans and professors all the way down to, again, the other employees that serve the university. So that I have found, to me, in my experience, and again, being a woman is different than being a woman of color or somebody who perhaps wasn't born in the United States and now is living here. But that being said, I'm keenly aware of it because, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, often by default I've been expected to speak to that. And from my humble perspective in that, the tough conversation, because in Minnesota we're so unfortunately afraid of dealing sometimes with things that make us feel uncomfortable. I learned from living in the South for 9 years, which was a remarkable experience in so much as people in the South, as long as you say, God bless your soul, at the end of the God bless you, you can be as direct. That Southern hospitality really means about being honest. And so having those tough discussions, and not just doing it because it seems like the right thing, but doing it because it's the moral thing and because it's good business. It's good business and it's good leadership. And sometimes that discomfort brings people to the table that in the end find common ground, that in the end find themselves really on the same side of the conversation or at least committed to working through those differences. So it's not, again, just who looks different on campus or I asked if I could share just for a moment. At Easter dinner, we were having a conversation, and I looked down at the table. We were talking about, actually, President Obama, and about him being the first black president, and what that was going to mean for children of the future. And I looked at my nephew, and I said, so Kyle, when you check a box, what do you check? And he said, oh, I don't know, I usually check other, I don't know. And then I said to his brother, Parker, what box do you check when someone asks about your ethnicity? And he said to me, why would I put myself in a box? And that, to me, was one of the most, an epiphany. Why are we putting people in a box? Why are we segregating our students and our faculty in a manner that makes us feel like we're different from one another? Why don't we truly roll up our sleeves and integrate our thinking towards being welcoming and inclusive to all, and really addressing some issues that make people who are traditional students, like myself, I was old, so I got a feeling of what that is to be a different student on campus, to very important things in terms of diversity of people who aren't like those native people that grew up in Minnesota and thinks that's how we are, you know, 20 and 30 and 40 years ago. I hope that answered some of
it. Can I just follow up with a probe on that?
Sure.
Thank you. So can we, I just want to ask to speak more specifically about our role as a, as the land-grant institution in this mm-hmm. state. Many students fall by the wayside before they're able to reach the University of Minnesota, many students of color. And that is obviously our K through 12 achievement gap. What do you think our role should be in addressing that situation so that it's not just about fostering an environment for those students of color who can make it to the university, but encouraging our minority population to be able to get to that point?
Sure, and thank you for that question. And I think that our role at the University of Minnesota is to start early and to partner with not only other higher learning education institutions, but work with broadly across the state in terms of the educational. When we moved to Florida in 1997, our neighbors surrounded us and said, so what is it, Florida State or Florida? And it's because we had a maroon and gold flag on our front door, Gophers. Our neighbors who were Gator fans thought we were supporting Florida State, but they were really talking about the program that started in elementary school towards getting kids ready for entry into college. And certainly as the University of Central Florida grew in South Florida and some other higher eds, keeping the young people in the state of Minnesota, or sorry, the state of Florida, became key. Because Florida's full of old people, and they wanted to keep it attractive so that the future of the economy in that state and higher ed was vibrant, and it worked. I saw my kids in those programs. And I, since we've moved back to Minnesota, I did have one child that graduated here in Minnesota, and I didn't, I think it's sort of ironic to me, and I don't want to be mean about it, but I want to be factual about it. I don't see that in the University of Minnesota. I hear about it, I heard about it for my daughter when she was in her junior year and going to college fairs and whatnot, where that discussion started to occur. But we need to be working with young people at a very young age to talk about that readiness, the college preparation, and not higher ed for everybody isn't going to be going to college or going to the University of Minnesota. It might be a technical college. And therefore, our relationship with the Technical College and MNSCU and some of the other partner organizations is fundamental, and it needs to start early. I will also mention that going into the University of Minnesota for some students directly might not be the path to success. And therefore, I call it the back door. That's how my son got into the University of Florida. He went to a smaller school beforehand, and he was really ready to take that on. And although it took him 5 years to graduate from college, that was the right way to do it. And we need to think about less traditional programs that are 4 years and people enter as a freshman and they come right out of high school at 18 years of age and away they go, because that's not always the way that's best for the student. And I think it more makes it more accessible for many different kinds of students, not only students of color, but I also think it makes it perhaps in some cases more affordable, because paying for things along the way might make more sense. And it might take a longer period of time, but you don't have that student debt, and you fully get to embrace the situation on your own terms.
Thank you.
Sure.
Council Member Hipsch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your interest in serving. Building on your comments just now with regards to Minsku and some of the other partnerships, you come with a unique perspective, having had a degree from both the University of Minnesota and from the Minsku system. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about what you might encourage to build additional partnerships and additional collaborations between those two systems, as well as private college system, and really set a vision for the future of higher ed in Minnesota.
Sure, I can't speak too much about the private colleges because I don't have the relationships there, but I can speak to Minsku in so much as not only did I really value that experience that I had at Minnesota State Mankato, but I've become friends with President Davenport and see his enthusiasm and people in that system for really creating unique partnerships. I mean, just down the road here we have St. Paul College and the wonderful things that they're doing that, again, might start out as one entry point for a student that gets one kind of degree only because of that beautiful environment there and that inspiration of learning and understanding that their passion might be different than they thought or their skill sets are different, leads them on to other things. So call them portals, call them places for entry. Who knew in some cases that someone might, you mentioned medical school, that they might have an interest in medicine or they might have an interest in STEM. Or in my case, I always think that I'm a creative person trapped in a very analytical world. Who knew that I was going to end up leading companies because I think of myself more as an artist. So having relationships with the arts as well as the sciences is really key. And making sure that we're thinking about those portal of entries in a manner that says, boy, wherever our young people, wherever our students come in to the system, it's good for all of us because the boats all float higher if we have a student population that's not leaving the state and not returning.
Vice Chair Taylor.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Susan. You and I have known each other for quite a while, and I've always had great respect for you as a person and also your accomplishments. Thanks for sharing on one page many, many years of success. If you were to look at this page, could you pick one of the many accomplishments that you think would really make you well qualified to serve as a regent for the University of Minnesota?
Well, I'm going to pick strategic thinker because in strategy comes contemplations of many different ways of thinking. And I've not always had to be the person with the best idea in the room. I like being part of a winning team. So it doesn't have to be my idea. I can be a promoter of very different perspectives when they're good ideas. So I'm a good listener, and I love strategy. I actually got a certificate at Harvard. I stayed on for a couple more classes to get a certificate because I think it's such a fascinating science. And I think strategy comes at that intersection between art and science that I mentioned. I'm a creative thinker, but I've been in this very analytical world, and I love that intersection. And so being on, should I be so privileged to be serving in that capacity, I would be a collaborator and a contributor from a strategic perspective, both asking good questions, sometimes the hard ones, as I mentioned. I'm comfortable in that role, but also being a good proponent of an idea, even if it comes from a perspective or vantage point that is not my own.
Thank you.
Councilmember Carlson.
Three times you've mentioned you're comfortable with tough questions, hard questions. Regents are going to have to do it. We have to too. And you were the co-chair of the National Senior Games in 6 years. And when it was concluding, the Star and Tribune says that you, the co-chairs, and the committee left the city with a $303,000 unpaid bill. So I have a multiple question. You were co-chairs. Why did it happen? Why didn't you see it in a 6-year cycle? what actually happened to it, because as hard as I Googled, I could not find and what happened. And so, and what advice would you give to somebody who's going to chair an event like that in the future? So I guess there are four parts.
Right. Well, those are really important questions to ask, and I'm not surprised that it was asked, because my name is associated with that. So there was a lot of things that weren't talked about in the press about that, because it was a complex event that was a statewide event and a lot of partners at the table. And at the same time, we commenced that. The parties all agreed to, meaning we were a chair of a committee that served it, but it was really a collaborative process between the cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Bloomington. And in that process, they couldn't imagine anything finer than in the heart of July, when hotel and restaurant activity take a dive, to bring in 10,000 athletes from around the country to fill that, after having the, you know, Major League Baseball and some other big events. There wasn't anything on the chart after 2014 slated. So everybody was on board, and that was until we landed the Super Bowl bid and the Final Four bid. So the people who stepped up to the plate and said, we're in, we're going to make this happen, decided really at the last minute to not support the senior games in kind of a, not only disappointing way, but a surprising way. That said, the reality of some funding that was supposed to come through from various sources at the last minute, through the state and through some of the other supporting initiatives, was at the very final hour not appropriated, and we had 10,000 people at our doorstep. So the reality of which, it appears as if we didn't pay our bill, but in true fashion, a lot was done behind the scenes to make that event continue. And I might add that after the event, the committee, which would be like all of you who signed up for creating an opportunity for an entity that was beyond your control as a volunteer, worked very hard to make every single one of those vendors that weren't paid whole again. So behind the scenes, we continued to fundraise after the event was over, when organizations, you didn't get anything for it, you just got the opportunity to be a nice person. I guess that would be sort of like some of the people in, who lose a campaign, who then have to go back and look for additional funding. So between Dave Mona and myself, who was the other co-chair, we worked tirelessly for 2 years after that fact to reconcile every single one of the outstanding bills that wasn't paid. The bill to the city was a tough one, because there was nothing that the city could sell besides convention space. So the best thing for them to do was to, write it off, if you will. And not that I'm going to say that the media wasn't entirely factual, it's just that the whole story's not there. And I could fill you in at a later time how hard we worked to make that whole. And I will also say that in the end, 10,000 athletes came to the state of Minnesota in the heart of July. It was one of the most successful senior games ever. It was a remarkable experience, and the tax dollars and the hotel fees and the restaurant fees that went to the city need to be reconciled in that. And I will also say that it's my understanding that in the past, for example, Major League Baseball also had an outstanding bill that was written off by the city at the time. So it's not entirely unprecedented. It was unfortunate, and certainly not the headlines that we wanted to see in the paper after putting on a remarkable experience and really a grassroots kinds of event, unlike the Super Bowl or the Final Four that has really a professional backbone to it. Ours was put on by entirely volunteers. So I hope that answers some of it. And I hope I didn't sound defensive in that.
No, I thank you for answering it, because when the legislature looked at our RCAC process, one of their critiques of our last go-around, we didn't ask tough questions of some people that we had information for. So we're really doing you a favor by having you give have an opportunity to answer.
And I'm not surprised that it came up, and I wish Dave Luna was sitting next to me so we could both enumerate the wonderful volunteers around us who stood steadfastly, the community leaders who said, this is unfortunate, but we're not going to step back from our obligations here. And the reason why you didn't hear more about it is because a lot of people were, it wasn't the best outcome, but a lot of people were made whole, and a lot of people made a lot of sacrifices to make that event occur. And aside from that difficulty, it was actually a wildly successful event, which wasn't heard about as much as the headlines about what happened with the city.
Additional questions?
Oh, I can ask one.
Vice Chair Madsen.
So I'm looking at your resume, and I see that you are still the CEO and president of the Better Business Bureau. And being a regent takes a lot of time. And I'm just wondering how you're going to be balancing your work life and the duties of a regent should you be elected.
Thank you for that question, and that's a good one. I hope you would find me to be one of the most disciplined people that you've ever met. And I, in addition to working hard as a career and as a working mom and as a caregiver of aging parents, I have always had this ability to do a lot of things and never commit to anything unless I can fulfill that promise. The beautiful thing about Better Business Bureau is it's a statewide organization, and serving the community from an ethical and leading by example, I guess it will, is an important part of what I do. So it's a statewide organization. The footprint is the same. Getting out and meeting people that are similar people that I would do in my role, that's my job, is to be externally facing. So our board of directors is aware of this application and excited about the opportunity that it would bring to us, excited about the experience that it would bring to me as a CEO. I'm a lifelong learner, and I would value the ability to grow within the perspective of being on a board that's serving such a large and complex organization. And to that point, I've talked to a number of the regents to understand what that balance is. I understand it comes in cycles and it comes in waves, and the first couple of years are harder than after you get your sea legs underneath you and you learn the process. I would tell you it's not unlike what I did when I served as the Minneapolis Regional Chair of Minneapolis Regional Chamber Chair, and where I actually ended up, because of a resignation, because Charlie Zelli got to be the commissioner, was appointed to being Commissioner of Transportation, serving in his role and finding that balance. But mostly I would tell you I'm extremely disciplined in everything I do. I make hay of the time and my car, so I listen to things that I can, and I plan ahead so that I actually plot out what I need to do and when I need to do it. And I'm sure it would be perfect in the first couple years, but I would work hard to make that balance right.
Any additional questions?
Anybody ask any tuition question here?
That's your question, Councilmember Rogers.
Well, it's a question you obviously have to ask students about, and it has to do with how we maintain tuition levels. The university has an extremely large budget, they cannot infinitely increase the tuition levels to balance this budget. And my question is your ideas on how they might look for additional resources or methods of balancing that budget they have annually.
Well, that's a really interesting question, and certainly the complexity of the university's budget would be something that I'd be very excited to look at, because I think one needs to think when reconciling a budget as well as want the income to be greater than the outgo. But you also have to be mindful of the fact that the return on investment of time, money, focus, and resources are all the same. So there's the budget, there's the number part of it, but then there's the reality of if something is inefficient of time or something is inefficient of resources, and we're long-term not investing in certain elements of it, be it infrastructure, then we're losing money in the long run. So I think that a broader base, strategic approach to budgeting is important for the long-range success of the University of Minnesota. And I haven't sat in that chair. I haven't gone through those budget worksheets, so I don't want to think like I've got the answer and I could figure it out in a whim. But I do know that coming back to traditional things like always tuition is rather myopic in terms of that revenue stream and what the university depends on in terms of that. Likewise, only thinking about salaries and capping certain things, even though personnel sometimes is the largest share of any balance or of any profit and loss statement, a giant indicator, there may be other ways to be more efficient in that. So I take a broader stance. Again, maybe that's because I don't have an accounting background. I don't have a finance background. Up until my degree at Harvard, I used to joke, you know, I'm running hundreds of millions of dollars of company and of revenue, and I hadn't had math after 10th grade, but I've changed that recently. And that is to say that a creative look at a budget process with a mindset of here's the here and now versus the what we need in the future is key. A budget is like a musical score to a strategic plan. So if you think of a budget as being only what yields on the bottom line, you're missing out on the broader perspective of what should go into the creation of that budget. And it's a very broad horizon perspective in where you want to be. Otherwise, it's just crunching numbers, and it's really not changing anything different in terms of behaviors and opportunities in the long run.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of our questions. Thank you very much. We'll turn it back to you for any closing thoughts or comments you'd like to make.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I expect this to be rigorous, and we're all very polite and kind, and I appreciate it for a long few days. That
most of us.
And still awake.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
That's all right. I just would like to reiterate that I think I bring a broad perspective and some very unique perspectives and experiences that would make me well-suited for this opportunity should I be the one that bubbles up to the list of many qualified candidates. I would certainly serve it with a passion and a joy. It is the one experience volunteer-wise that I haven't accomplished, I haven't done, that I would do, so I don't take this lightly. This would be the pinnacle opportunity for me, and I would embrace that with the seriousness and the joy of being able to serve the University of Minnesota, which has been so central in my life. So thank you for listening to my pitch.
Thank you for your time and interest.
Thank you.
Have a